The Supreme Court of the United States ends their session with rulings on two of the most controversial issues in America, gun ownership and abortion rights. However, were the decisions by the highest court in the land contradictory? Well, in the case of guns, it took away the rights of a state to decide the legislation regarding concealed carrying of firearms. But in regards to abortion, said it was a decision which should be left to the states. Why the difference? In today's first edition of 360 View, we are going to look at the issue of abortion rights here in America with the latest ruling reversing Roe versus Wade and making the procedure immediately illegal in 13 states, with more expected to follow. But abortion is not just a controversial issue in America, and we will not only look at how abortion is handled by other countries, but why many countries like the United States have recently changed their policy. I'm Skynell Hughes, and join me as we look at abortion in a global context on this inaugural episode of 360 View. Abortion is one of the most controversial topics in American culture.
We won't go back!
We won't go back!
We won't go back!
We won't go back!
Now, the Supreme Court decision has fired up this divisive issue, leading to cause for a summer of rage. Buildings in D.C. were boarded up after the decision came down. Riots erupted outside the Supreme Court, spilling into streets across America, even shutting down highways. Is this reaction solely unique to America? Now, we want to take a look around the world at which countries have the most restrictive and most similar laws to America when it comes to abortion. Now, polling shows countries differ on their opinions of abortion depending on their culture and their religion. For this report, we want to go to our international correspondent.
That's right, Scotty. We are seeing differences in opinion on abortion across the world. But first, I want to start with current global abortion laws. Before the American Federal Supreme Court Roe versus Wade, America had the most lenient abortion laws. If you look at the map created by the Center for Reproductive Rights, you can see America's laws were comparable to most of Europe, China, Russia, Colombia, Argentina, Turkey, and Australia. These countries in blue have the fewest restrictions on abortion. However, let's zoom in into China, where in the past 6 months, the Chinese State Council has issued guidelines to restrict the number of abortions. China is going through a fertility crisis as the one-child policy has led to a male-dominated population. Now, China's solution is to restrict abortions and citizens can no longer abort a baby due to its gender. This all began with the one-child policy where families wanted a boy to carry on the family name. Girls were either ill cared for or died shortly after birth, or hidden until school age. Starting in the 1980s, when doctors could predict the sex of the baby before it was born, the number of preterm abortions skyrocketed and has now led to a large male population in China. In the more rural provinces where two children were allowed per family to help on the farm, you see a higher number of girls. You can see in the map, parts of China have a 1-to-4 ratio of girls to boys. While the government has ditched this new sex-selective abortion prohibition, a poll from worldpublicopinion.org finds 67% of people in China would prefer the government leave these matters to that individual. Half of the polled countries believe abortion decisions should be left up to that individual. This includes 6 countries where abortion is legal: France, Great Britain, the United States, Ukraine, Russia, and China. Not surprisingly, France and Great Britain came out with the highest number of individuals preferring the government take a hands-off approach to abortion restrictions. France allows abortion on demand up to 16 weeks, while Britain allows abortion up to 24 weeks, or if the baby would be born with physical or mental handicaps, or would bring physical or mental harm to the mother. But Britain also does not require doctors under duty to perform the surgery. Meanwhile, three of the countries where the people want less government involvement have highly restrictive laws. This includes Poland, Mexico, and South Korea. Through over the years, Mexico's laws have been loosening, and now restrictions vary at the state level. On the other hand, in countries like Indonesia, Thailand, Iran, and Nigeria, people believe the government should restrict abortions. But only Indonesia has an overwhelming 60% support of the government using criminal enforcement. While 84% of Nigeria believes in restricting abortion, only half of those, 42% in total, believe the government should have criminal enforcement. Currently, Nigeria only allows abortion to save a woman's life, while Indonesia only allows abortion to save a woman's life and in cases of rape or fetal impairment. However, when looking at the sample, these views have substantial differences when you add religion. Though the Catholic Church is very clear on abortion views and has even turned down certain public figures from accepting communion due to their outspoken support of abortion. Christian pollers show the most liberal views. 65% are in favor of leaving the decision to the individual, and only 8% support criminal penalties. Muslims have the highest percentage of supporting a government's restriction on abortion at 59%, with 31% in favor of the government enacting criminal punishment to enforce abortion restrictions. According to the World Public Opinion Poll, there were no significant differences of opinion in their findings between men and women in this study. For 360 View, I'm Roxana Solano.
Thank you for that report. Now I want to welcome in Rory Rylings, an attorney and legal analyst. Rory, thank you so much for joining us on this initial show.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be your first guest.
Well, let's talk about this, because how has the Supreme Court decision, really, how has it already impacted the states across the country?
Well, it's already impacted a number of states because some of them have passed what we typically refer to as trigger laws, meaning that when an event takes place, it triggers the law in motion. So with the anticipation of this ruling, a number of states passed laws that said if Roe were to be overturned, that abortion would either be illegal or restricted in certain ways in those particular states. And with the Dobbs decision coming out last week, that was in fact the event that they were referring to that would trigger those laws going into effect. So we already have seen in a number of states the law has changed. There's certain other states that never repealed old abortion laws. For example, Wisconsin had an 1849 law banning abortion on the books. That law was never repealed. It just wasn't enforced while Roe was a Supreme Court precedent. So that's really what we've seen, is that these trigger laws are either already going into effect or have a timeline where they will be going into effect soon.
And Rory, I found it interesting. These trigger laws were not just passed within this latest legislation. It was years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. And a lot of these people did this as campaign promises, just to fulfill a pro-life promise, thinking Roe versus Wade would never be overturned. And here we are, and those laws are going to effect. But there are some state judges who are temporarily blocking these abortion bans in some of these states. Now, is this legal with the Supreme Court, who is supposed to be obviously the highest court of the land's their decision? And how do you see this playing out?
Well, I think the short answer to your question is that it's complicated. So in many cases, the types of arguments that we're seeing, so Louisiana, for example, the trigger law in that state was stayed, but the reason was because the law was unconstitutionally vague. The plaintiffs there argued that there were a number of laws that had conflicting provisions, so it was hard to comply with the law until those ambiguities were resolved. So in that sense, yes, it's legal, but it probably does nothing more than buy time, while state legislators, who are obviously very passionate about their pro-life views, will respond to what the perceived ambiguities are if a court decision comes out. In contrast, in Utah, for example, the plaintiffs there have argued that even though there is not a national constitutional right to abortion, that the Utah state constitution reserves that right. So state constitutions vary in terms of what their language specifically says. So that'll really vary from state to state in terms of what those specific state constitutions say. So, for example, in Colorado, they did include in their state constitution a legal right to abortion. Most states have not done that, but how we interpret things like a right to privacy, equal protection, that is going to be at issue in a lot of these cases. So at this point, in terms of the lawsuits that we have seen, yes, they are legal, and it's oftentimes when we have a big precedent like this that changes the legal landscape, the question becomes not what is legal and what is not, but what does the implementation look like? And figuring out the details of the implementation can get quite complicated. So that's what we're starting to see now with some of these state court decisions.
Which, when you realize that the Supreme Court is just basing this not necessarily on the issue of abortion, but on the 10th Amendment, this is exactly how it's supposed to be playing out according to the Constitution. Each individual state making the rules for their land if they have not already. But now we are hearing this pro-abortionist call for a summer of rage. You saw that initially. We've even seen it building up to the decision. From Democratic leaders to a video of a pro-lifer who was actually beaten and rushed to the hospital all by a group of Antifa members. Should this behavior be condemned, especially by leaders of the Democratic Party who are obviously upset with the decision?
Well, I certainly think that the behavior should be condemned. I think that violence should be condemned in pretty much all instances. And over the past couple of years, we've seen some conflict between what constitutes a protest. Obviously, there's a constitutional right to protest, and when that protest crosses that line towards violence. And we don't want to promote violence, and certainly I think leadership starts from the top. So you can certainly have your opinion, you could be angry, you could disagree with that decision, that is absolutely your right. But I think when you start inflicting violence, injuring other citizens, and inflicting damage on property, that's the thing that our politicians on all sides, I think, should be condemning regardless of circumstance. So yes, I think so.
Well, and yet you're not hearing very much coming out from them. In fact, you've heard a lot of them in the streets actually encouraging people to take the streets. Like I said, peaceful protest, protected by the Constitution. But this violence is something that I almost see as recently becoming an answer for when you disagree with something, you actually take the violence into damaging property. But another argument that's come out for pro-abortionists is this idea of climate change. You know, the fact that we have this overpopulated world, studies have shown that a child is one of the worst possible things you can do to the environment. And we're not just talking about in your own home that we know a child can wreck within 5 minutes. We're actually talking on the bigger picture. You know, having a child is a big deal. How do you think this push towards a greener future has actually impacted possible changes in abortion policy, which is obviously to limit the amount of children that are able to be born?
Well, first, I just want to say that as a mother of a toddler, yes, I can confirm that they can destroy your own home in a matter of minutes. But to get to your bigger question about environmental policy, I think that that's certainly a factor. And people who are supportive of rights to abortion, they want to appeal to people in any manner that will get them to support their side. I mean, that's true of any policy argument. So if people are not receptive to the traditional arguments about abortion, perhaps they'll be receptive to this greener planet argument. With that being said, I don't know how much of a factor that truly is, because I think that we've seen people who hold these beliefs, they've been pretty steadfast in their beliefs even before there was this push for a greener climate. There are many people who feel that, you know, this is a right, bodily autonomy. And while I think that this talk of climate change certainly adds to it, I don't think that it's necessarily a game changer. I think that even if that argument were off the table, we would still be seeing a lot of what we would be seeing today in terms of the arguments for people who are in favor of abortion. So, I mean, yes, I think it's a factor, but I don't think it's a game changer.
Okay, so one other factor that's come out, because no one ever expected this to happen, companies almost immediately are now offering to pay for travel, all this to other states, for their employees to get abortions. I have to tell you, as a working female, my red flags went up on this one, because obviously, Is this because they just feel bad, they want to take care of their employees, or is it actually because it's cheaper for an employer to actually pay for the employee to have an abortion rather than actually offer decent maternity, paternity leave, or any sort of program that makes it a better working environment for working mothers like yourself?
Well, I think we could certainly have another conversation about what adequate maternity, paternity leave looks like. We could do a whole nother show about that. So I won't get bogged down in the details there. While economics are probably a factor for some companies, I think the bigger factor is we've really seen over the past couple years companies wading into the culture war in a way that they have not in the years previously. I mean, look at what just happened with Disney in Florida. And whereas before, companies didn't want to offend any potential customers regardless of issues, the social climate has changed. The culture wars have escalated. And there is an expectation, I think, particularly with the younger Gen Z, that companies take a stance on some of these issues. And so I think we're seeing that more and more. I mean, really, I think that the death of George Floyd was a turning point in terms of companies wading into the culture war. So I think that this is just, no exception, that they're continuing to make statements on cultural issues where they would not have before. And this is companies, I think, particularly companies who perhaps are operating in bluer states and want to appeal to the population and the workforce there. That's a stance that they're going to take. So, I mean, again, I think that economics certainly play a factor, but I think bigger picture is just corporate landscape has changed. And we now see businesses take stances on controversial issues when that's not something that they did even just a few years ago.
Well, obviously things are changing. And Rory, I appreciate you joining us and lending your legal insight. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a short break. And afterwards, we're going to give you more of the 360 view on abortion.
А у нас ни воды, ни хлеба, вообще ничего.
Здесь продуктовые наборы, здесь есть все.
Обстреливают еще нацики, понимаешь?
Азовцы, если находили московские телефоны или что, убивали в хлам.
Нацики отходили, просто заливали бензином с канистр, подпаливали и уходили.
Люди очень боятся, чтобы сюда назад не вернулась Украина.
Детей можете отдельно собрать, сейчас закончу, сладкая Розан.
Главный принцип – все, что собирают люди в России, донести непосредственно в руки нуждающимся здесь, на территории Донбасса.
I look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence or its own existence.
Волынь – это особая территория на Украине. Территория, все время находящаяся так или иначе под контролем противоборствующих сил. К 1939 году поляки составляли примерно 15-20% населения Волыни.
Когда был атак на Союз Советский, в том же атаку również брали уже два батальона украинских националистов.
Морды массовые, подчас которых нищено целое все Волынское, распочались в лютом 1943 года.
Они верили в то, что таким образом они движутся к созданию украинского государства независимого, моноэтничного, такого, какое они хотели видеть.
українських націоналістів, тобто власне донців опублікував, там вже не завагався доконати жодні зброї на своїм противнику, якщо того хоче вимагав добру України. І це той огромна просьба своєї життєвісті мати.
Welcome back to 360 View. I'm your host, Scotty Nell Hughes. Now, America was founded as a country with the right to choose your religion, but it has historically been founded mainly on Christian views. As the country has progressed, these religious views have been pushed out of politics, schools, and the home. And how do different religions integrating and the social push to wipe out religious influence change a population's view on religion? Well, we want to bring in political activist Tiana Khalid. Welcome, and thank you for joining us all the way from London.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Okay, so located there in the UK, you have a lot of the same freedoms in England as Americans when it comes to the freedom of expression. Would it be strange to see people violently protesting the way they are right now, considering the Roe versus Wade decision?
I think, honestly, abortion has been legal in the UK since about 1967, and you can actually still have an abortion here up to, I believe, 23 weeks into pregnancy. And abortions can only be performed later on in the stage if there is some sort of significant risk to the mother's life, or if there's a fetal abnormality that's detected. But I don't think, you know... After the Roe v. Wade decision, I think there has been a lot of misleading, just misconception throughout, especially in my generation. I think a lot of people love to jump on the bandwagon of whatever's trending on social media and whatever it is without actually having any sort of basis and understanding and knowledge of this, is because this is such a complex issue at the end of the day. And it's a very nuanced issue. But I don't think there hasn't been protests that I know of yet, but you know, who knows, it's just started.
Well, as we were talking about before, even during the break, whatever starts in the UK usually funnels across to the US a few weeks later. This argument has started mainly because probably it's an election year in the United States. You'll see it in a few weeks when Parliament decides to take it up. And as you point out, England, like America and most of Europe, really does have some very lax abortion laws. Termination of a pregnancy is up to those 24 weeks, or if it would harm the mother, or if the child could possibly be born with a physical or mental disability. A lot of this debate actually came from post what happened up until the moment of life was where the debate was coming from. Now, I want to also ask you about the Muslim community, because here a lot of our laws are based off of Judeo-Christian beliefs. But how does the Muslim community actually feel about abortion laws in the UK, and how do you actually approach it from the Muslim perspective?
So, you know, as a general consensus, I think Muslims view abortion as haram and it's unlawful and it's forbidden in Islam. However, there are a few exceptions. And I think Islam is one of those religions that takes the golden mean, if I can say, when it comes to this issue, and by which I mean basically that it takes the middle path and says that, you know, abortion is permissible up to a certain stage of the pregnancy. And most Islamic scholars, I think, would agree that the termination of a pregnancy for fetal anomalies is allowed before ensoulment. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. But I think, you know, however, after 120 days, abortion is only deemed acceptable if the pregnancy poses any exceeding danger to the mother, or if the fetus is actually examined to have any sort of abnormality, or if it's possible that it will have any sort of severe disability. But you know what's really interesting is that even within each school of Islamic thought, there is honestly a lot of variance, a lot of disagreement on abortion, and there is a lot of dispute about which circumstances really qualify as an acceptable reason. And this difference, I think, of opinion is based on which stage of pregnancy do scholars think that the soul really enters the embryo. So, you know, to really answer your question, I think Muslims in today's progressive age have a much more, I think, liberal approach to abortion, and the laws in the UK tend to mirror that ideology. So You know, especially for the Muslim youth that are heavily, heavily influenced by social media and just pop culture. So on a surface level, honestly, I don't think it's a very polarizing issue within the Muslim community, because I think we all come from a very ethical background that has instilled a basic moral code within each of us. So in Bangladesh, for example, where I'm from, the general consensus among an overwhelming majority of the population will always align more with conservative principles, if that makes sense.
Now, you are current a London resident, but as you mentioned, you're from Bangladesh, which borders India, and have knowledge of this culture in India, where courts have been perceived as very progressive. More than 70% of the abortions in India are because of unplanned pregnancies or health complications and legally admissible reasons. Even then, a quarter of them actually take place at home, not necessarily in a facility. How much could a restrictive abortion law in the U.S. actually have this ripple effect on accesses to services, information, choice, and resources for abortions in India, even considering they're already very progressive?
Can I first address that there actually are no restrictive abortion laws in the U.S.? You know, I take it that you're obviously referring to the so-called restrictions that have resulted from overturning of Roe v. Wade.
Or the heartbeat laws. Those were in place even before Roe versus Wade. If you could hear a heartbeat, an abortion was not allowed. Right. Certain states had those. So those are what I'm talking about, the restrictions that have been in the U.S.
Right. Yeah, right. So, you know, I just wanted to address that the Roe v. Wade thing is like the general consensus about Roe v. Wade and what people are deeming it to mean is a complete fallacy, because I think there's a massive misconception, because abortion hasn't been banned in the U.S., right? The reason why Roe v. Wade, I think, was overturned is because abortion rights were never part of the Constitution in the first place. So it now goes back to obviously each individual state on a case-by-case circumstance, which means abortion is still accessible in almost every single state. But this is actually a win for both sides, whether you are pro-life, whether you're pro-choice, and certainly a big win if you believe in democracy. But secondly, I think abortion laws may have a ripple effect in India, but only, I think, in the metropolitan city areas where people have, you know, become more progressive, or because of Western ideologies and particularly the American way of life, which has obviously now become like a standard for living amongst a lot of people who live in the cities. But in the rural areas, you'll find that, you know, there is, and in the rural areas where most of India and the population reside, they're actually very entrenched in ancient religious morals and values and principles. So, you know, there is and always will be a very strong cultural identity when it comes to for the vast majority of the population.
You know what, Tiana Kelly, thank you so much for joining us on this very controversial issue and kind of giving us a little perspective of how not only people in the UK, but as well as how the influence this might have on other countries' policies such as India. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. You know, the debate regarding abortion, not only here in the United States, but around the world, is a combination of environmental and theological influence, which results in government policy. In fact, I cannot think of a controversial health topic whose legislation is less to do with science and more about the country's religious perspective than abortion. Maybe this is why we are seeing such radical changes these days. But science does come back into play in regard to preventative options, and will those now become more of a priority to have access to, and by who? Now let us remember, mankind can only continue if they are fruitful and they multiply. Therefore, the challenge for all should be not to figure out how to prevent life, rather, how to create a world which encourages a good life. I'm Skynell Hughes, giving you the 360 view of today's news from around the world. Thank you for watching.